When we think of incarceration, state and federal prisons often come to mind first. But there are thousands of county and municipal jails across the country where people are held for a variety of reasons. Many are never convicted of a crime, but the experience still has a tremendous impact on them, their families, and their communities. Derek Jeffries is a professor of religion and philosophy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. His most recent book is America's Jails, The Search for Human Dignity in an Age of Mass Incarceration. He joined us from our Green Bay studio. Derek, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Judith. Happy to be on.
Let's start off by defining jails versus prisons. How are they different?
Well, an important part of this book is to make that distinction. You know, we sometimes talk about the jail and prison interchangeably, but a jail is a county institution, usually, not always, but in most places. And it's a place where you have most of the inmates who are pre-trial, so you can have anywhere from 60 to 80% of the people there are legally innocent. And this is really important because when I talk about jail conditions, sometimes people say you do the crime, you do the time, or something like that. And that's not really the case because most of the inmates in a jail haven't committed a crime yet. They haven't been convicted of a crime. A prison is either a state institution or a federal institution. And everybody in a prison is convicted. So that's really an important distinction that I try to make in this book.
That was actually very eye-opening for me because I had not thought about that distinction of who is actually there. What about how long people spend in either a prison or in a jail? I think we often think of jails as a very temporary thing, and sometimes it is, but sometimes people end up in jails for a lot longer time.
That's correct. I mean, they're supposed to be in jail just for about a year. That's the usual standard, but that's really not the case. People can be there a year, 2 years, 3 years, sometimes as their trial wears on. And I've taught some inmates. I teach in a jail in the prison system, and I've taught some inmates who have been there 2 or 3 years, which is really quite extraordinary.
Well, and I think that's also a really important point, is that there are people who are waiting for their day in court, but they're waiting at home or they're waiting on some kind of release program. So who are the people who are in jail for a year, 2 years, 3 years while they're waiting for a court date?
Well, when you enter a jail, you'll find, the original purpose of the jail is to hold people who are not going to show up for trial or people who might be dangerous. And there are people like that in the jail. No one would deny that. But what you find in a jail when you enter it is, first of all, a lot of poor people. I mean, a lot of people who simply can't afford a bail. When you're arrested, a judge will tell you have to pay a certain amount of money in order to stay out of jail. And there are an awful lot of poor people who just don't simply have that money at all. In Chicago, where I did a lot of my research, you have to pay 10% of your bail, and so people might be able to afford that. In Brown County in Wisconsin, where I live, you have to pay 100% of the bail. So a lot of poor people simply can't pay that money. And so you'll find a lot of those people in the jail. And the other population, very sadly, and this is a difficult issue, are people suffering from mental illness. People end up in the jail system who don't have any resources, don't have any insurance, and they end up doing something on the street and they end up in the jail. So those two populations, you find a lot of people in those populations in the jail system.
And I think prison definitely conjures up a certain image, but jail might sound like a better place, an easier place to be. You just mentioned the Cook County Jail in Chicago, where you spent quite a bit of time doing some research. Can you describe for us some of the conditions? I know you could talk for hours about this, but some of the conditions that you found at Cook County Jail and heard about from both inmates and from people working there.
Well, you find really awful conditions in this country in both jails and prisons. But in fact, sometimes I've talked to inmates who had worse experiences in jails than prisons. So it's important that you point that out. And I did spend time in the Cook County Jail. The sheriff down there is trying to make things better. But when I was there, conditions were pretty awful. So you find really awful sanitary conditions. I mean, you find sewage in some jails, just going down the in the halls of the jail, and terrible food and rodents and things like that. But you also find a great deal of violence, and it's inmate-on-inmate violence, and it's also staff violence. This is something that's difficult really to talk about, and I'm not, in my book, I'm not here to condemn all corrections officers, anybody like that, but it's important to recognize that there is a considerable amount of staff violence in our jail system. And so you'll find that. And the last thing that I discovered is this lack of mental health care and medical care. And with such a large population of people suffering from mental illness, this is really can be a disaster. So I think that the conditions in our jail system are really bad. Now, there are exceptions. There are people who run a relatively decent jail. But if you think about, we have 3,200 jails in the United States, over 700,000 people a day on any given day in jails. 12 million people go through the jail system annually. And a lot of people go through institutions that are pretty awful.
You talked, Derek, about people coming into the jail system and often being assessed for mental health issues by people who are not equipped and not trained to be able to do those assessments. But even people who come in with a diagnosis, often with medication, they even have a hard time continuing their treatment, even keeping access to the medications that they've been prescribed and come in with.
That's entirely right. As you said, sometimes the assessment isn't good at all. We just have a big shortage of psychiatrists and psychologists and trained nurses to assess people when they walk in the door. So the assessment can be really quite poor, perfunctory. But even somebody who does come in with some kind of condition, they may not get their medications for a couple of days. And you know, if you're on a psychotropic medication, this can be really a real disaster. And sometimes the jail wants to put you on another medication because it's cheaper than the one you're on. And so this really creates a lot of problems. If you're suffering from some kind of mental disorder and you don't have medication, it's really bad for you. And it causes problems for the staff, too. I mean, you've talked to staff people who really deal with this on a daily basis. So this is a big problem in the jails.
We're talking with Derek Jeffries right now. He's a professor of religion and philosophy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. His research focuses on ethics and violence, and he's written books on torture and solitary confinement. His most recent book is America's Jails, The Search for Human Dignity in an Age of Mass Incarceration. And Derek, I want to talk about dignity right now. You focus a lot on how jails don't preserve and in many cases actively degrade the dignity of the people who are incarcerated. I think it might be a natural question for people to have with all the many very concrete problems that you list in your book. Why focus on something kind of as amorphous as dignity?
I'm a philosopher and a philosopher of religion. And so when I write books, I try to focus on some of the philosophical, the religious issues related to whatever topic I'm looking at. And dignity has been a central topic in the work I do because I think moral concepts are important. The way we treat people is important to all of us. And the idea of dignity that I talk about here is that people have value just because they're a person. It's really a simple but important idea. You don't get your value from your parents or from society or from any kind of community. And the thing that's important, too, is that you can't lose that dignity even if you do something awful. And some people that I teach, they feel like they've lost their value. And it's important to have them recognize that that's not true and it can't be true. No one can really lose her value no matter what she does. So that's the view of dignity that I want to defend in this book. And I think it means that we don't treat people in certain ways. A person has a certain value. And a thing has a certain value, and we don't treat persons like we do things. That's a basic distinction that I try to offer in this book.
Going back to the fact that a lot of people who end up in jail either are found innocent or charges are dropped, and so they never actually go on to being convicted and sentenced, you talk about how being locked up once, whether guilty or not, how they can really start a spiral for people financially and in other ways. Can you give us a little sense of what that's about?
Well, when you're in jail, you can't, you have difficulty perhaps paying your rent because you can lose your job. If you're particularly in any kind of subsidized housing, you can lose that subsidized housing. So you can lose your job, you can lose your rental situation. And you become estranged often from your family members, or separated from your family members. If you're a mother or father, you are then taken away from your children. And it's a very painful experience to not be able to see your children. And you also, a lot of people don't know this, but in many jails, you get assessed all kinds of fees, fees for being there and in the jail, $20, $30 a day for the time you spent in the jail. And even if you're found not guilty of a crime, you're going to have to pay those fees. And so if you think about what we said earlier, a year, 2 years, 3 years, that's a lot of money. And I'm presented with a bill after I leave, and that can really be detrimental to my credit rating and all kinds of other things.
Right. You said that that actually often gets turned over to a collection agency, which then damages credit, which can impact being able to get housing or, say, buy a vehicle.
Absolutely. And if you're trying to get a new job, if you're trying to get a job and you have a bad credit rating, you're trying to get a loan, having this big bill here in Wisconsin, it comes from Madison, can really be detrimental to your life. One example that I describe in the book is everyone knows about Ferguson and the unrest in Ferguson. But part of that unrest had to do with the fact that you had this cycle. A lot of people were coming in and out of the jail, and the city was using that as a source of revenue. And sadly, this is not uncommon in the United States for municipalities to use the jail system as a source of revenue for different things. This is a huge problem for me in the United States.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for sharing your research with us. Really interesting.
Well, thank you, Judith.
Derek Jeffries is the author of the book America's Jails, The Search for Human Dignity in the Age of Mass Incarceration.